heard that the Metallica boys were gonna play some heavy shit tonight.
Welcome to Muppet Podcast. I'm Ethan Luck, and this is another edition of Metal Tales from the Road. And before we get into Pittsburgh and talk to Ryan Morrissey, I just want to let you all know that this is our episode for Monday. Clint will be back next week. We'll be back in full force. We had a busy weekend with Luke Combs once again. And we're going to knock this out with Ryan, talk about Pittsburgh, talk about his story. And we'll be back business as usual next week. So we got a lot of cool stuff coming up. We'll be back on our tour bus with the Magic Machine with all the fun sound effects. We've been lacking that the last 2 weeks, but we're going to make it happen with Ryan here. But everyone, welcome. I'm going to insert a round of applause because the machine's not here, Ryan, but everyone give it up for Ryan Morrissey.
Ethan, thank you for having me, man.
I mean, listen to that crowd, man. They just won't stop cheering for you, dude. They're really excited you're here.
Yeah, I am too.
Well, first thing I have to ask you is... you mentioned to me before we started recording that you live in Boston.
Yep.
How is it wearing a New York Yankees hat in Boston?
It is honestly not that bad, especially because the Red Sox aren't very good right now.
They're terrible. But, I think last place, I believe.
Yeah, they are. I wear my Yankees gear loud and proud here. I don't care, you know.
Well, and the Yankees are going to the playoffs, so that's good.
They are.
And yep, the Mets clinch. Of all teams. The Mets are going to the playoffs.
Yeah.
So my daughters will be there too, so... I'm excited for MLB playoff season. Always excited for that.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, Dodgers are, they're great to watch. So
that's amazing. You said that as a Yankees fan. Here's the problem with the Dodgers. I mean, they did win the World Series recently, but in general, they've made it to the postseason the last 10 seasons, I believe. And every time, like they crush the regular season, they make it to the playoffs and then they just suck.
Yeah. That sounds about right. I'm a really big Clayton Kershaw guy, so I kind of I follow Dodgers somewhat loosely, and I feel like like you said, I mean, he's one of the best regular season pitchers, but sometimes in the playoffs doesn't always come through. Yeah. And then with the shortened season, they made it happen. But
right, for sure,
always fun to watch.
Oh yeah, well, and then you have of course Mookie Betts on the Dodgers, who is he's a Nashville native. He grew up in an area called Bordeaux.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's from Nashville.
Okay.
Yeah, there's an area called Bordeaux, which is it's Nashville proper, but it's just on kind of like the north side of town, of downtown, and that's where he's from.
Okay, yeah, didn't know that. Have certainly seen plenty of him here because I go to a lot of Red Sox games. So when he was here, I saw a lot of him.
That's awesome. Player. Do you have season tickets?
I don't. I have. So the Red Sox do this cool thing where they like the locals get like kind of a good deal. So I get 5 games a year for $9. So I go to as many as I can.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's a pretty sweet thing they do.
I mean, even if you can only get to 5 games, you said 9 games for $5 or 5 games for $9?
So 5 games, $9. Yeah.
$9 each.
Yeah. So you can get like up to 20 tickets. So for each of those games, you can get 4 tickets for $9.
That's pretty awesome.
It's kind of ironic because like the beers inside are like $12, but
yeah,
just get you in the building.
It's $9 to go into the outfield section here in Nashville to our minor league team, the Sounds. But it's cheap. It's worth it. It's just a grass hill. You bring a blanket, you spread out, you have a good time.
No, I love that. Any baseball I can watch, I love it.
Absolutely. Yeah. We did a tour of Wrigley last fall Fenway when we came through Boston last fall, with a day off. I still haven't seen a game there, though. Clint Morgan and Johnny just recently saw a game there, but there was a weird loadout situation where I had to wait for my drums longer than they had to wait for their gear, so they got to go into the game, and I was still waiting for gear to come off the stage to pack up. So I was bummed because that would have been stadium number 9 to see a game at. I've been to the stadium numerous times, taken the tour, but I've never seen the Red Sox play there. So I'm trying to – I was hoping by the end of the season I would hit 10 stadiums, so I'm at 8 right now.
Oh yeah, I think that episode was a couple of weeks ago. I listened to that. You heard you tell that story.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But it's been a fun thing to try to. It doesn't always happen, but to try to be on the road, and especially during the summertime, we're out across the country doing festivals and things like that to try to hit other teams' stadiums. So we got to do a Detroit Detroit Tigers game recently, which is really fun. And we almost went twice. Like a week later, we had another day off in Detroit, and they were playing again. But we were like 30 minutes outside the city, so it was a little big, kind of expensive to get downtown.
Yeah, Detroit, that's a really nice ballpark. Comerica Park is really beautiful. And that venue that's like connected to Fenway that you guys played at, MGM, like brand new. Did you guys like it a lot?
Oh, yeah, it was great. Yeah, I think we were like the third show there ever.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because I walked by it. I went to the Red Sox game the other day. And because that's been under construction, like literally since I moved here.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to finally see that, like with the final vision. It looks really nice. It literally looks like it was like, you know, pre-built in with Fenway. Like it's seamless. It looks really good.
It's pretty wild. Yeah. When we walked into that venue to load in and stuff, I was looking around going like, how is there this much space here?
Yeah. Right.
You know, it's like, I mean, I remember playing at House of Blues back in, I think it was February maybe with Ryan Hurd. And I was standing outside and somebody was explaining what that new venue. I remember thinking like, oh, that can't be that big of a venue. I mean, Fenway Park takes up this whole area. And walking in the place, it holds like 5,000 people.
Yeah, I can't wait to go. I was going to try to catch a ticket for you guys, but I think it was sold out. It was pretty expensive.
Yeah.
So I think I saw you guys are coming back to Boston in March, I think. Yes. I might try to snag a ticket for that. Yeah,
we'll be back in Boston. Yeah, Morgan just announced her spring tour for those listening that didn't see that or didn't see people talking about it on the Discord. Morgan announced our first ever headlining club tour around the whole U.S., like a five-week tour or so. And we'll get to play the Ryman again, which is, of course, awesome. I've played there already, so it's not that big a deal. But it'll be cool. A lot of people on our Discord and people just we know through the show have been talking about that tour and wanting to come to shows and stuff like that. So, of course, like usual, we'll try to best accommodate people. If we have the space on the guest list to get a few people in, we will. It just depends on the city, of course.
Yeah, for sure. That was really – I saw that on Instagram the other day that you guys had the headline tour. Looks super cool, super excited about it. The venue in Boston that y'all are going to, the Sinclair, is like kind of a – it's an establishment here. It's a really cool place.
Yeah, that's awesome. I've never played there before.
It's cool.
I usually in Boston, it's either, well, I've played the Garden, and that's awesome. But club-wise, it's back in the day, it was where the House of Blues is. It used to be called the Avalon and the Axis.
Okay.
I used to play there. I've played House of Blues and Paradise Rock Club, like the main places I've always played there.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one down the street from, it's like maybe a mile or so away from Paradise Rock Club. I've played there before, and I can't remember the name off the top of my head. It's a little kind of a punk rockish club.
Yeah, I think it's Brighton Music Hall.
That's it, yeah. Thinking of.
Yep. That's really it. Small.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's a fun place to play too. But, Boston's totally. Always a fun town to go to. Great food, great people, great shows. Mm-hmm. So no complaints on our end.
Yeah, totally. And the Boston Metal Tales was actually the first episode of y'all's that I heard.
Oh, nice.
So yeah. So that's how I, got into the podcast and got into the whole thing. So
that was the first episode you ever listened to?
Yeah. That was the first episode that I listened to. Cause I went to that show, Boston Calling. And so after that, I was kind of trying to get my fix in and just looking through podcasts and saw you guys. And like, it was a really great episode. So kind of went full in from there.
Dude, that's awesome, man. I can't imagine somebody listening to our podcast for the first time and the first thing to listen to is a Metal Tales. And maybe they're thinking this is just what the podcast is. They just talk to Metallica fans or something like that.
Yeah, well, no. And it worked out so great because I went to the show. So I was kind of like, just like, oh, yeah, saw that, heard that, So right. It was great.
Well, that's awesome, man. Well, hopefully we'll get to hang in Boston next time. Sorry, we skipped over your email or message or whatever.
No worries at all.
That was a little bit of a tough, at least for me. My wife was there. So right before those two Boston shows, we had 3 days off and everybody but me flew home.
Oh, okay.
So I stayed in Boston for three. So I was there for 5 days total.
Oh, wow.
But my wife flew up because she was wanting to get out and travel a little bit. So she came to meet me in Boston. She was there for the first show and like half of the next day, and then she went home. But I was obviously a little distracted, doing that, seeing some friends. But happen next time, dude.
Yeah, for sure. What part of town were you staying in?
We were staying in Bayside.
Bayside.
So I directional. It's like kind of close to the airport, but we were right by. I can't remember the name of the bay we were on. It wasn't called Bayside.
Maybe Seaport. or
maybe so. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I just remember it was we found the hotel to be pretty helpful just because it was close to the airport when everyone else was flying back in, and it was like a 2-minute walk to a train stop to get into the city or wherever we needed to go. Like my wife and I went and hung out in Cambridge for a while one day, and
yeah,
it was like super easy to get around from that location. And we always have to think about bus parking as well.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
But it was cool. It was right by the water. I remember, you know, before my wife flew in, like we were, me by myself, took my bike and rode all around the bay and stuff like that. It was really pretty. And the weather was great while we were there. Yeah, man.
Yeah. Great time of year to come here. In the winter, not so much, but right now it's great. Yeah.
I've been there in winter when there's like snow banks in front of Paradise Rock Club, like 8 feet tall. And
not as fun.
they carve out like a little section so you can roll your gear through and stuff like that. But
yeah.
I don't mind the cold though. I, summer's my least favorite month as far as weather. So anything colder than summer, I'll deal with it.
No. Yeah. I'm from Vermont originally. So winter is not a big deal to me. It's just kind of in the city. There's not a whole lot to do. So.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, man, so this is your first Metal Tales ever. So congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you for having me again.
Of course. Yeah, man. And I know we kind of set this up somewhat last minute cause we're leaving town tomorrow and stuff, but, so let's, you know, have our audience get to know you a little bit. You know, we want to hear your Metallica story, your origin story, how you came online with the band, you know, first show you ever saw, favorite record, just details like that.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, throughout this, I certainly have to give, you know, some other people credit, of course, because, you know, I didn't discover the band entirely on my own. But, you know, growing up, I think, you know, my parents weren't super into music. Like my mom's, you know, she's like the world's biggest Bruce Springsteen fan.
Okay.
But like, aside from that, I was kind of, you know, left to my own devices growing up in terms of discovering music. So I was born in 95. So like growing up in elementary school, I would say, you know, the bands that I was into growing up was definitely like Linkin Park and like Green Day. That was definitely like, you know, my vibe, like elementary, middle school. And then like, as I got a little bit older, I got like, you know, way more into hip hop, starting to listen, you know, Nas and Biggie and all the 90s stuff, and then got really big into Kanye in high school. And so Metallica specifically has been, you know, honestly, like kind of a pandemic thing, like over the last 2 years for me. Yeah. So certainly, yeah, I'm 26 years old. So like certainly a new fan, and I kind of get this way with everything like Star Wars and like kind of like I just dive all the way in, and it's kind of like I got to know everything. You know?
Right. Yeah. Clint's that way when he gets into something. I mean, I'm that way depending on what it is, but I've noticed this about being friends with Clint for so long now is that when he comes online with something, when it kind of clicks, there's no stopping him. You know what I mean? You know, when he watched The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan documentary, that docuseries, which is amazing.
It's really good.
It just kind of clicked for him. And all of a sudden he's watching basketball. He's buying jerseys. You know, it was really cool to see because I'd never known Clint to get into sports before that. You know, and so now, like I said earlier, like, you know, we went to a Detroit game and had a blast together, you know. But yeah, so and I've gotten that way too. It's for me, it's a lot with like maybe a specific series or definitely with like guitar gear or something like that. You know, if there's like a new pedal I buy or something, like I'll go straight down here to my studio and I'll just sit there and spend hours and hours with it just to really get to know it and stuff like that. But but that's cool. You really just got into the band like in the last couple of years.
Yeah, totally. And so like, as we talked about earlier, like, you know, my whole life, I've been a really big New York Yankees fan. And so like growing up watching the Yankees, and Mariano Rivera was my favorite player. And, you know, when he came into the game in the ninth inning, you know, Enter Sandman, that's his song, Yankee Stadium, every time. And so, you know, like I've always had, you know, a certain awareness of the band. But again, you know, through the pandemic, you know, starting to work from home, you know, living in Boston, was living with a really good friend of mine from college. Shout out to CJ if you end up listening to this. But it was just one of those things where like after work, we kind of, because, you know, like restaurants were shut down and like we couldn't really do a whole lot. So after work, we were kind of just, you know, like hanging out, watching TV, doing whatever.
Right.
And we got really into the TV show called Billions. Are you familiar with Billions?
I've heard of it, but I don't know what it is.
Oh, okay, perfect. So then you don't know their connection to Metallica then?
I'm sure at some point somebody emailed us about it.
Okay,
but yeah. I don't know the show off the top of my head.
No, yeah, no, so it's great. So yeah, so me and my homie CJ were kind of just getting like really big into Billions. And the main character on the show, Bobby Axelrod, he owns like a venture capital firm, whatever. And like in the show, he is a really huge Metallica fan. And so in the show, like they go to a Metallica show in Quebec City, and they like went into the tuning room and like filmed for like 15 minutes with the guys. And so like in the show, the character, he's like having a conversation with James, like about, you know, trying to like, he's like stuck in life, whatever. And he was like trying to feel free. And so he's like getting advice from James. And then like in the tuning room, then they're playing Harvester of Sorrow. And I was that scene is really cool. And I was like, oh my God, like, what is this? And then again, kind of just like listening to music all the time at home. And again, you know, me and my roommate, CJ, we just got like started listening to everything. You know, I think we started with Ride the Lightning, and it's just kind of listening to Fight Fire with Fire. And it's like, what in the world is this? And it's crazy. And just like first reaction, again, just like not really, you know, being into that type of music my whole life. And then again, just kind of like diving all the way in. It's kind of like, I try to explain it to my friends. It's just kind of like, it's, you know, similar to Star Wars in the sense, like the amount of lore surrounding this band is like insane. Right. Like I just, there's so much research to do. And so like, I found myself just like, I dove all the way in, and kind of like 2 years later haven't really gotten off the train yet.
Man, that's so wild. Like, I don't often talk or meet people that are that new of a Metallica fan, or if they are, it's like, oh yeah, I recently got into the band. That's cool. But to the point where like, you've gotten into our podcast, you're a patron, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's pretty wild,
right.
You know, you jumped off the high dive into the deep end, dude.
Oh, totally. And it's kind of like, because I've been to, my first show was Atlanta last November. And then that, so like, I kind of, after that, I didn't really expect to see them again anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
Cause that was kind of like a one-off show. I think it wasn't like a festival, but they played at, the new stadium down there, Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It's really beautiful. So like I went down there kind of being like, you know, I don't know if they're ever going to be around me anytime soon. Like I kind of just, I got to go. And so I went to Atlanta, and like that show was incredible. And then kind of, you know, fast forward a few months to like March of this year, it was announced that Rage Against the Machine dropped out of Boston Calling.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was kind of like, I didn't really have any specific plans to go to Boston Calling. And then I saw on Instagram that Metallica was the replacement for Rage Against the Machine. And then get this. So that same friend that I was talking about, CJ, that I was living with at the time, that I kind of discovered the band with, Metallica was playing on his actual birthday, May 29th. And so we were like, we have to go.
Yeah.
There's like no questions. We have to go. So yeah. So we went to Boston Calling. And then again, like I said earlier, it was kind of just like, continuing to dive in, and then found you guys on the Apple podcast app. And now, you know, here we are.
Now we're on Skype.
Yeah, exactly. And then it was the same thing as like, then those, you know, those two one-off shows in Buffalo and Pittsburgh were announced this summer. And then Pittsburgh was just kind of a better like flight situation for me out of Boston. It's
sure.
Like an hour and a half. So I decided to do Pittsburgh instead.
Awesome, man. That's so cool. So, so your friend CJ on his birthday, was that his first time seeing the band?
It was his first time seeing the band. It was incredible.
Him and I shared the same story then that I talked about last week with Brad. It was seeing my first time was on my birthday too.
Yep. The episode that just came out Monday. Yeah. I just listened to that. I just heard that story in Australia, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's wild when you get to, you know, like whether it's my situation or your friend CJ, it's like, it's kind of a no brainer, obviously, you know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't plan mine out. I just happened to be there and realized they were playing there like 2 days before the show. But yeah, to be able to plan, like if I knew they were playing, you know, this October 16th somewhere regionally near Nashville, like a drive to or easy or something like that. It's like, yeah, no brainer. I know what I'm doing for my birthday.
No, totally. And we've kind of like made a pact since then. It's like, if they ever come back to, I mean, I'm sure they will, you know, you're talking like maybe new album next spring. If they're coming back to the Boston area, probably like Gillette Stadium next year or the year after or whatever, like we are there, no questions asked.
Yeah,
like we
for
have
sure.
To go type situation. Yeah.
You definitely do. Absolutely, man. Yeah. So what are your thoughts on that? I've kind of touched on it a little bit in the last two episodes. Other than, you know, the show in Florida and the All Through My Hand show, I mean, it's pretty empty this fall. I'm thinking, I've said this a few times, my gut is that they're going to announce the new record this fall.
Yeah. I mean, that would certainly be pretty exciting. And to kind of rewind for a second, just a little anecdote. I remember very specifically in 2016 when Hardwired came out. I was kind of just on Apple Music at the time, going through the, you know, what's new. And if you go on Apple Music and, you know, you look at the description for Hardwired, it says word for word, it says like, chalk this down as perfect skateboarding music.
Hey, there you
go. So that kind of perked my ear. And I was like, oh, you know, I grew up, you know, in the skateboarding, snowboarding scene. And so I was kind of like, oh, you know, played for Shock Hardwired. And like at the time in 2016, because again, I just wasn't like, you know, into metal really at the time. It wasn't for me at the time, but like looking back and kind of like, that was such an interesting thing. Like I remember specifically seeing that album cover and seeing that description.
Right. Yeah.
And then like now, obviously, like I love that album a lot now. And it's kind of just like an interesting little thing to look back at.
Man, it's wild for me to think that, you know, you getting into Metallica only 2 years ago, you know, like when I got into Metallica, it was shortly before they released their fifth album. So I had four records to go back and listen to, you know, then the Black album came out. But now it's like, man, you have so much stuff you got to dive into in the last 2 years. I mean, 10 studio records, you know, like, the, you know, S&M 1 and 2.
Oh, my God. I know. It's Garage so Inc. much to digest. Yeah. It's insane.
That's pretty awesome, man. So where have you kind of landed on, like, do you have a favorite era of the band?
Yeah. I kind of say I'm a pretty big Jason guy, just like watching like a lot of stuff on YouTube. Like I really like folks, you know, musicians that are just like, you know, really connected with the fans a lot. And it seemed like he was, you know, that was kind of like his MO, was just like hyping everyone up, you know, mm-hmm. being really close with the fans. And so just like, I think, yeah, I would say like Justice is probably, I think I've landed, like, that's my favorite album. I'd say it's not the one that I listen to the most, but I'm really big into that album the most. Cool. I would say, yeah.
How do you feel about like the 90s stuff, like Load and Reload specifically?
So as I said earlier, I think like me and my roommate CJ, we started with Ride the Lightning, and then I would say we kind of went forward from there. So we did like Lightning and then Puppets, and then, you know, Justice, and of course, you know, you get Black Album in there, and then I think we went like a little bit backwards to Kill 'Em All. I would say honestly, like through it all, like I haven't dove as deep into Load and Reload as I have like everything else. I kind of skipped forward to Death Magnetic and of course Hardwired, you know, that's certainly up there for me.
Yeah.
But like I do listen to Load and Reload, but not nearly as much as the other albums.
Well, Clint will be disappointed, but
I know.
We need to change that. Yeah. Well, so have you gotten through all of our episodes then in 2 years?
No, I haven't. I was kind of, so I started working my way like down.
Yeah.
Like from like newest. And then I kind of went all the way back to the beginning and was starting listening to, you know, the album reviews and then, you know, the, you know, like the episodes about the members of the band.
Right.
But I would say I've listened to maybe like 40% of the episodes. I'm kind of like, it's like a sandwich. I'm kind of going from the top and the bottom.
Sure, sure.
But then like all the new episodes that come out, listen to those.
Yeah. So, well, if you want to dip into more Load Reload nerdiness, then there's the episode, I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but I believe it's just called Unload, where we, me and Paul and Clint, we basically choose what we think are the best songs from both records.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of make an ultimate album called Unload.
Okay, cool.
Based off a mistake, you know, Paul texted us one time.
Yeah, I think I would say after the 40th anniversary show, when people were like freaking out that they played Fixer, I think that kind of got me into those albums a little bit more. I was like, yeah, you know, I got to take a little bit more of a deeper look at this. But I think, you know, those are probably the two albums that I'm, you know, the least familiar with in the whole catalog.
Yeah. Well, I was that way for a long time where, you know, like I was, you know, right at the end of high school when those were coming out. And man, I kind of kick myself for not really diving in earlier. I was in a different musical space back then, you know, like I still loved all the Metallica records before that. But when they came out, like I heard the singles and stuff like that, but I was just like, you know, by the end of high school, I was just like neck deep in like ska, reggae, punk rock, you know, some metal stuff, but mostly like, you know, a lot of the punk rock stuff, especially the California stuff, was really kind of taken over for me. Like, so bands like Green Day, The Offspring, Social Distortion, you know, I was obsessed with No Doubt. I still love the band, whatever. So they kind of went under my radar until Garage Inc. or S&M came out. Then all of a sudden it was like, man, I need to dip back into Metallica. Like, I kind of had the first five records under my arm, and that's all I needed for a long time. And then when Garage Inc. came out, I was like, oh, all the stuff from Garage Ace is on here, and all these new covers. This is rad. And then that's when I kind of jumped back in.
Nice. Right on. Yeah, you mentioning Green Day gets me, because I think American Idiot was probably, I think that was the first album I bought with my own money in 2004. Yeah. I was 9 years old.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's certainly crazy to think about.
That's pretty awesome. But, yeah. Man, that's one of those bands I still, that's like at the, it's almost at the top of my bucket list. I still have never seen Green Day. I've seen them live at an award show that I was at.
Not the same though.
Right. I mean, they still kicked ass. They played two songs. Yeah. So it's like, I'm only seeing that, but I got to watch them sound check, which was cool. But, I still have yet to see a full Green Day show, and I'm really wanting to, cause I know that they put on one of the best live shows out there, and Billy Joe's one of the best frontmen ever.
Exactly. I hear they're great. And from what I see on YouTube, they seem to still have all the energy there. So
we'd
love to see them.
Yeah. Well, listen, maybe we can go together.
We'd love it.
Well, like a lot of great bands and stuff like that, you know, if they ever come through Nashville, like, I'm usually on the road, you know,
like, you
know, the Chili Peppers stadium tour came and played Nashville and I was gone, you know, it's just a bummer. Like, so many good shows happen. I mean, that's the reason I didn't see Metallica till like 2010, just because every time I lived somewhere, they would come through and I'd be gone. But it's worked out. I've seen them five times now, you know, and, four of the times were outside of Nashville. So that's cool.
Yeah. And I think like I said earlier, like, I think I'm going to put like a 500-mile radius on Boston. If like the next time they're within 500 miles again, like, no question.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the nice thing about living, you know, and it might be somewhat similar up there, but, Nashville's so centrally located in the eastern half of the US. It's like, I mean, there's so many great cities that Metallica definitely plays like within 4 to 5 hours driving.
Yeah.
You know, you have Atlanta, Cincinnati, you know, if you have to go even further, Chicago's like an 8 hour drive, 7 hours, you know, Birmingham is 3 hours. St. Louis is 4.5, 5 hours. So a lot of great, you know, somewhat major cities that bands like Metallica will always come to.
Mm-hmm. Can't so yeah, we'll look out for the next couple of years. We'll see.
There you go, man.
Super excited.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. So yeah, maybe, like walk us, kind of through your journey getting to the show, you know, this was your second show seeing them, I'm assuming?
Pittsburgh. No, so this was my third, okay. Which is crazy to think about, third in the last year. So I had Atlanta last fall. And then again, I kind of didn't expect to see them for a while.
Right.
And then
they came to Boston Calling. That's right.
Yeah. And then they came to Boston Calling, and like, that was, you know, a must see, of course, you know, the birthday of, like, you know, they're literally right down the street. So I had to go. But yeah, so, you know, the two shows this summer, you know, Buffalo, Pittsburgh, just, I was like, kind of like I just said, 500 mile radius. I think Pittsburgh is, you know, a little more than 500 miles away from Boston. But I'm kind of just like, I got to go, man. Like, I just have to go.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So flew in, day of the show in the morning. I'm just like snagged an Airbnb, kind of just like, I forget the neighborhood, but north of PNC Park, like maybe a mile away.
Mm-hmm.
And, so Pittsburgh, unlike Boston, Pittsburgh is big on those like electric scooters that people ride around everywhere. I don't know if Nashville has but we don't have those in Boston. And so it was like a pretty far walk from the Airbnb. But those things are just littered everywhere. So I was like, oh, I'm just going to get one of those. Yeah. And so it was like 1 PM and doors were at like 4:30. So I was like, I'm just going to go down to PNC Park and kind of just see what's going on, you know, kind of just check the vibe. But then I guess, you know, in my head, I think I forget how like absolutely massive the following of this band is.
Yeah.
And I got to PNC Park at, I got there around 12:31, and like the line all the way, cause I had a general admission ticket. And so like line all the way down the block. And I was like, oh my God, like this is insane. I immediately was like, I'm not getting close. Like, I'm like, oh man, like I missed the opportunity, whatever. So I was kind of like, you know, I was like, you know, I've seen them like two times in the past year, like whatever, like I'll get in when I get in. So I kind of, like right across from PNC Park, there's this place called, Bill's Beer Bar, I think is the name of it.
Oh yeah. I've been there.
Right. And so they've got like 500 beers or whatever, you know, they say. And so kind of just, you know, hanging out there. And of course, you know, everyone in there is there to see Metallica. So, you know, meeting a lot of really cool people, just sitting at the bar talking. And, you know, one thing that sticks out to me is I was sitting at the bar and talking to these guys, and they were just because, like, you know, I'm young, I'm by myself. And so they were kind of like, hey, man, you know, you're from Metallica, whatever. And they were telling me that they saw Metallica in, I think, for the first time in 89 for, you know, the Justice tour.
Yeah, wow.
And they were showing me that these pictures that they had took during the show, like they were right on the rail. And my mind was blown about that. And I think the Justice box set must have come out in 2018, right, for the 30 year. And so they were saying that, you know, the band reached out in 2018 and kind of was, you know, asking fans for photos and everything, and they showed me that those photos that they showed me were in the Justice box set. So that was really cool. I'm sorry, guys, I don't know if you listen to the podcast, but thanks for showing me those photos.
Like, that's pretty cool, man, just to have your photos in print on thousands upon thousands of these box sets.
Yeah, no, I mean, I couldn't believe those photos. I mean, they were, you know, James was sweating on them, literally. Really, really cool to see.
And that's back when you're taking a film camera to the show.
Right.
You know, it's not like you pull your phone out real quick and snap a few photos. It's like, hang on, let me click, click, click and wind it over. And then, you know, depending on what kind of camera you brought, I guess.
For sure. And I don't know what the vibe was back then, but I think they said they had to sneak the cameras in. I don't know how it worked, obviously, but.
It's pretty wild back then. I remember before, you know, before iPhones or smartphones, even before flip phones, like if you went to a show, it was like no cameras allowed. And now literally everybody in the crowd has a camera in their pocket, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
But with social media, I mean, it's like, depending on how well your show goes, I mean, all you're getting is free promotion. Yeah. Not that Metallica needs it, but if there's anything to be hyped up, like, you know, recently when they play Lollapalooza, you know, and they incorporated the Stranger Things scene into their video. I mean, I saw that because some knucklehead, you know, filmed it with his phone, you know. It's so wild to think, like, I remember going to shows in the 90s, like, arena, like, my first arena show I ever saw was Rush in Anaheim, California, and I remember, I didn't bring a camera, but I remember seeing signs everywhere, it was like, no cameras, or certain shows, you could bring a camera, but it was like, no flash.
Right.
You know, but of course, you know, some dummies just like, oh, I don't know how this works, and bleep, there's a flash, but... Yeah, it's weird what you know, what you couldn't bring into shows back then, and now it's just normal.
No, for sure. Another small anecdote, I remember, because again, I was, well, still am, like, you know, musically, like, really big into Kanye, and I saw him on the Yeezus tour in 2013 in Boston, and I brought a disposable camera in with me, and I was, like, really nervous about, you know, the flash with those, but, like, waited in line, got all day, got on the rail, and I got some really good photos from that I'm, you know, super happy about.
That's cool.
It's one of those things where it's like, is it a risk, whatever, but, you know, looking back, it's so worth it. Such cool photos.
Well, yeah, I mean, if someone's going to nag you over a disposable camera,
right,
compared to, you know, everyone having like a crazy high quality camera in their pocket, I think, you know, you're going to be all right bringing a little Fuji film in there.
No, I was thinking more so just like flash, just like with the proximity to the stage, you know, like, I don't know.
Right.
Never know.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, so it was just hanging out at Bill's Beer Bar, and then kind of just, you know, waited for doors to open. Doors opened at like 4:30. And then, cause I was expecting the line to kind of like take a long time, but they had like, you know, like four entrances, and it was kind of like, you know, the newer, like smarter security systems where you kind of just like walk through, and like everyone kind of like, you don't need to do it like single person, kind of just like people like walk through and they have little like things, and then they stop specific people if they have metal or whatever. So it actually went through like really quick, and so I kind of just went in, didn't wait that long, and then kind of just, you know, went down right to the floor, and you know, I positioned myself like right in front of the snake pit. And because again, I entered for the snake pit contest, didn't win.
Yeah.
But you know, maybe some other time. I ended up like probably like, I would say like 15 people back from the front, like directly in the middle of the snake pit. Like I was like standing on top of, you know, like they put like on the ground, like that yellow thing that like covers the wires. I was like standing directly on top of that, probably like 15 people back. And then it started to like, you know, like really fill in. So I was like, I'm going to go get a beer like right now before it's like too late, you know? And this was like an hour before Ice Nine Kills came on.
That little thing, that thing you're talking about, you're standing on, is called a cable ramp, by the way.
Cable ramp. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it's called in the biz.
Yeah. So I was standing on the cable ramp, went and got myself a beer, and kind of just like, because again, I was, you know, I was by myself. I wasn't with a group or anything. So kind of just was there the whole night.
Yeah.
Just, you know, just waiting.
Man, that's so cool. Yeah. Dude, that's so awesome, man. What a cool experience so far. I mean, and to be able to, you know, to be across the street, see the line forming and still get, you know, a good standing spot is pretty cool.
Right. Yeah. I kind of didn't know what to expect because like the line, you just was so long, but then you kind of forget like how dispersed it is mm-hmm. on the ground. And like the stage is so huge. And so this was the first show that I had seen with their setup with the giant screens, you know, with like the M and yes, the A on the end.
Totally.
Cause yeah, in Atlanta and Boston, they just played, you know, whatever stage was there. But this was the first one that I saw that had like their own whole setup.
Mm-hmm.
So it was certainly, you know, pretty stoked on that. And, you know, first one with the Snake Pit as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome, man. Wait, so you did get in the Snake Pit?
No, no. I was like standing, I was like on the, what'd you call it? The cable ramp.
The cable ramp.
I was like
ramp, 50, yes.
15, yeah, 15 people back.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Directly in the middle. Like, yeah. So pretty good view.
Yeah. Well, with the Snake Pit, you've got that, you know, that, basically the catwalk that goes all the way around, you know, the Snake Pit.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I know on certain songs or they we'll get to it, but they start the set out front, right?
Yeah, they did. And I didn't expect that. So we'll definitely get into that.
Yeah. But that's pretty cool that you got to see that too. And be as close as you were, you know, cause if you're in the Snake Pit now, you know, the first couple songs you're looking at their backs, you know, unless they turn around
right
to you.
Yeah.
Or at least Lars is back, but.
Right. Yeah.
Continue on.
No. Yeah. So Whiplash opener. So third Metallica show in the past year, third Whiplash opener. We'll probably, you know, never get sick of it. We'll see what they bring out, you know, in the next tour. I think that, you know, they'll probably switch it up. But again, I didn't expect them to come out to the front of the Snake Pit to start the show just because I had never seen a Snake Pit show before.
Yeah.
So, you know, like Ecstasy of Gold plays, you know, that's obviously super emotional, super hype. And then, you know, the Whiplash intro starts, which I expected them to play Whiplash because I had looked at the Buffalo set, which mm-hmm. was like three nights before. And it's pretty much the same set, except for I think they switched out Black End with Battery. But I didn't expect them to come out. So like the, you know, Whiplash intro is starting and then like the drum kit is rising mm-hmm. on the Snake Pit. And then, you know, Lars comes out and, you know, I was like, wow, I kind of didn't expect that. It was super cool that they came out to the front, you know, to start the set.
Yeah, man. Yeah. That kind of stuff's exciting me. I mean, I've only seen that on the Hardwired tour when they would come out for Seek and Destroy
mm-hmm.
and do that before the encore. But yeah, there's little tricks like that, that, you know, artists like them do in a big setting that kind of makes it feel like it's a smaller show, you know, it's almost like they're more approachable that close. And you know, they're just right in front of you. Like there's your heroes right there, just like 10 feet away or whatever, you know?
Yeah,
or that's why I like seeing them in an arena because they always do it in the round in the center of the arena.
Mm-hmm.
They've been doing that since like the Black album. So, no matter where you are on an arena floor, you usually have a good seat. Like when we saw them in Nashville and me and Clint and Paul went, you know, we kind of stood by Big Mick doing front of house, and I at no point that I feel like I'm too far away.
Yeah.
You know, and I was kind of on the back and we were kind of right where they were coming out too, which was kind of cool to watch them come out. Like, and in those shows, it's almost like you're walking out to like, it's like WWE, like there's this big
right.
aisle, right? And like barricades.
Yeah.
And, you know, expect to see Hulk Hogan come running out of there. But yeah, that's pretty cool that they started a lot of these shows out front.
Oh yeah, totally. And I'd be curious because again, I've only seen like these giant like stadium/festival shows. I think I'd probably like an arena show, like not super intimate, but like still like, you know, it's just smaller, you know, yeah. 15,000 people. Like
it feels more intimate after you've seen a stadium show for sure.
Oh yeah, I bet.
Like the first time I saw them was an arena, and then the next, I think two times I saw them were stadiums. It was Philadelphia and Detroit. And then after that, it was Bridgestone here in Nashville Arena and then an arena in Birmingham, which that one was kind of cool because that one's a lot smaller than the one in Nashville. So that one felt even more intimate.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine seeing like when they did those surprise shows in San Francisco and Chicago. They're about to do that show in Florida for you know, Zazulas. Like, I couldn't imagine seeing them in like, I think that place they're playing holds like 7,000 people.
Yeah. I remember being super jealous of those shows. Cause I think someone did a Metal Tales about the one in San Francisco, I think. And I was just like, man, those tiny, because yeah, I think they did San Francisco and Chicago.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, there's no way they do Boston, but you know.
I know, right?
Yeah.
That's wild. I mean, like the small club thing, they've only done a very small handful of times. One was in Nashville where it was 180 people. That's the cap there.
Oh my God. That I mean,
it's a venue called The Basement. It's the Live at Grimey's release they put out. I mean, it's a tiny little club. I've probably played 25 times. And every time I've gone in there since, I look at that stage, I'm always like, gosh, Metallica played right there. It's so crazy. Yeah, and they did San Francisco, Chicago. It would be so cool to see them at a venue like the Metro, like something that big, you know? Or sorry, that small.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine.
Like House of Blues. Yeah, oh my God. I mean, it'll never happen, but it'd be amazing.
I know, right? Maybe they could play Paradise Rock Club.
Oh my God, yeah, that'd be... absolutely insane. That place, I've seen a few shows there. Pretty cool.
I love
kind
it.
Kind of set up a little bit weird, but yeah.
It is. It's like a wide venue. It's very,
exactly.
But what's cool is it's very shallow. So like if you're in the balcony or you're back by front of house, or even if you're over by the merch area, like you're still really close at Paradise.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's fun when you're on stage too, because it's like most shows, if you're in a big club and it's packed, you can see the people in the back, but like you don't feel that much of a connection. But like at Paradise, it's like you feel like you're surrounded and everyone's just right there.
Yeah, that must be really cool.
Yeah, it's definitely a fun one to play. So did you make any friends at the show? Did you start chatting with anybody?
I don't want to say, you know, friends, but I think, you know, environments like this, I think Metallica fans in general, just super open, you know, talking to everyone. So it was certainly, you know, talking it up with the friend or with the folks around me. I would say more closer to when Metallica came out, like not much during Ice Nine Kills or Greta Van Fleet.
Yeah.
I would say like after Greta Van Fleet left the stage, obviously like the vibe in the ballpark kind of changed, you know. Yeah. It's like getting all that stuff off the stage, you know, setting the Metallica stuff up. It was, you know, after that, I would say probably, you know, chatting with some folks a little bit more.
Yeah.
There was like three or four guys like directly behind me. I don't think they had seen them before, so I was kind of talking with them a little bit.
That's cool. How were the openers? Did you watch both their full sets?
Yeah, totally. And well, just because, again, because I was by myself, like I didn't want to lose my spot because I was front and center, 15 people back. I'm kind of like, if I leave, you know, I'm not going to get back in here.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, Ice Nine Kills was, you know, I haven't really listened to them much. It was, you know, I think the dress up like horror vibe is not necessarily for me, but I mean, they put on a fun set nonetheless. Like it was pretty cool.
Yeah. I've watched, I saw Slipknot here in Nashville like 2 weeks ago, and Ice Nine Kills was one of the openers, and me and Paul went, we missed them, but, only because we couldn't meet till later and blah, blah, blah. Anyways, before going to the arena here, I went online and like watched a couple live videos of them, and like they're tight and they're all great players and stuff like that. I kind of thought the kind of gimmick of the horror thing and like having like the Freddy glove and at one point he's singing with a shovel, you know, stuff like
right.
that. I thought that's kind of fun. And at one point, like, I don't know if it was someone on their crew or another band member like runs on stage and then he like has like a fake knife and like stabs the guy and stuff like that, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, they reenact the scene from Psycho where it's like the killed in the shower with the knife.
Right.
Like, they totally reenacted that. And so like, it's not totally for me, but like for the presentation of it, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome. Yeah. I'm sure they're one of those bands. Like when I listen to them on like Apple Music, they sound cool, you know, but right off the bat, nothing really captured my attention, but I only listened to like two or three songs before I had to go. But I'd imagine seeing them live might be a little better intro to them than maybe on record because of all the theatrics.
Right. Yeah, you know? Totally. And then Greta Van Fleet, like I think they're a cool band. Like I don't dislike them at all, but I'm not sure they're the best opener for Metallica. I think like I was happy to see them, but I think, you know, I think the crowd around me was a little kind of like, you know, like
right.
not really vibing with it. So
yeah. I mean, I think that band rocks, man. They you know, they got a lot of cool tunes. They're all really good players and stuff like that. I think unfortunately
totally.
They just get a bad rap because they're similar to Led Zeppelin, you know. And you know, bands like that come around from time to time where it's like they sound a little bit maybe too much like another band. But at the end of the day, it's like, well, Led Zeppelin, we have their records. They're not a band anymore. If these dudes sound kind of like them, but they kick ass, you know.
Yeah, right. And again, I mean, they played a good set. They probably played like 45, like 50 minutes, like good set.
Yeah.
And again, once they went off, you know, like the vibe was, you know, it was like, it's showtime. Mm-hmm. It's business now. Like,
yeah, people definitely know when you're a Metallica show, like the, like, you know, when I last two times I saw him, it was, you know, Jim Brewer doing comedy before and stuff, which I thought was kind of cool. Like, because, you know, there's sometimes I go see a band and like, I'm just there for the headliner and like, I don't want to listen to any other bands, you know?
Right.
When we saw them, when, you know, you had like Volbeat opening and Avenged Sevenfold, they're cool bands. I have nothing against those bands, but I'm there to see Metallica. So like,
right.
So having Jim Brewer be like the MC and kind of, you know, doing fun stuff, it didn't feel like an opener. It just kind of felt like he was just, you know, warming the crowd up. And then it felt more like an evening with Metallica, you know?
Yeah, totally. And I've heard Jim talk about that on a podcast or two. And I think that situation worked out so well because he's such a big fan of the band. Like, right. That's kind of why they invited him in the first place. And yeah, like you totally. Said, it's kind of just like evening with Metallica, and, you know, Jim is kind of MC beforehand.
Yeah. And I was geeked out when I walked in. I was actually more geeked out at Mixmaster Mike just because I'm a huge Beastie Boys fan. And he was their DJ for a long time. And so like walking in and literally like where we stood, he's just like 5 feet away, and like most Metallica fans probably don't give a shit who Mixmaster Mike is.
Yeah.
But I'm sitting looking over to him going like, oh my god, dude, this guy toured with the Beastie Boys, like this is crazy. Like that was cool for me to see, you know.
Yeah. Just, I didn't know that he was the DJ for that.
Yeah, he was our DJ. I mean, I mean at least since Hello Nasty. Yeah, because they have a whole song about him. Yeah, it's right on. That's on Hello Nasty. It's yeah. You mentioned you're a hip hop fan, and that I'm a huge hip hop fan as well. But yeah, Beastie Boys and Public Enemy are like my tied for number one.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Licensed to Ill was probably, you know, I mean, one of the first hip hop records I got into.
Yeah, what's funny is that's my least favorite Beastie Boys record.
I got to go back in then, because I mean, that's kind of,
it's not a bad record. It's incredible, especially, you know, in the '80s. It was like pretty groundbreaking. No one really sounded like them. Yeah, you definitely got to dip into more Beastie Boys, dude, for like hip hop. Yeah. I mean, like, to me, they're one of the most unique sounding hip hop bands of all time. Like, the album Check Your Head is my favorite. That was their third record after their second one totally tanked when they switched to Capitol Records. And they basically like bought their own studio because they realized they were spending like $1,000 a day recording ideas and stuff. And they're like, well, if we're going to spend this much money, let's just find a place we can buy. It's going to save us a ton of money. And then that's when they started like playing their own instruments on the records and stuff like that. And yeah, they're awesome. Or if you have Apple TV, there's a great Beastie Boys documentary called Beastie Boys Story.
I do have it. I'll have to check it out.
You should watch that, dude. It's rad. And it's like half normal documentary, half the two surviving members on stage talking in front of a live audience, telling their story. And then Spike Jonze directed it, who did a lot of their music videos and stuff like that. So it's, yeah, you should watch that and then start dipping into the records.
I certainly will.
Cause to maybe me, tonight. Those dudes are like the kings.
Yeah.
You know,
for sure.
And they're from New York, even though you live in Boston, but you're wearing a New York hat.
No. Yeah. I just read Scott Ian's memoir, and he was talking about, coming up, you know, with Anthrax, that like in New York, like they kind of, cause Anthrax is, you know, certain they in New York, like they were kind of in the hip hop scene and they were pretty tight with the Beastie Boys,
yeah,
in the '80s. So that, yeah, it's pretty cool.
I think when they did I'm the Man, their hip hop song, they wanted it to sound like the Beastie Boys, and it does.
Yeah. I think I remember Scott saying that in the book, that like, that was kind of not their inspiration, but like they wanted it to sound like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, dude, I think, I know we're on a bit of a Beastie Boys tangent here, but I feel like especially after Paul's Boutique, which is their second record, both the License to Ill and Paul's Boutique are great. But after that, that's when they basically had to kind of almost reform and make this new record called Check Your Head. And then because their last record tanked, they basically did like a club tour on that record, where before they were selling out arenas. Or maybe not selling out arenas, but they were like opening for huge artists, like selling out arenas and stuff like that. And to me, that's where they get really good. You know, like Check Your Head on is just, there's not one record I don't like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, dip in and check back in with me and let me know what you think. Cause
yeah, certainly will.
I'll listen to Beastie Boys any day. What were we talking about? Metallica?
We were talking about Whiplash.
That's right. Whiplash.
Again, didn't expect them to, you know, come out to the front of the Snake Pit, and it was super cool. And then, so during the final verse of the song, James's mic was not working.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah. And so it was kind of just, you know, the music was playing and, you know, the vocals weren't coming through. And then, so I listened to like the, you know, cause they like put out the, like you can download the shows like a couple weeks after or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I listened to it. And so I don't know like what the deal was, but like it only went out like through the PA, but like it was recorded. And so like listening to it on the version that I have, so you can hear James's voice, but I guess he might be like aware that it wasn't coming through the PA. Cause he was just, it was just absolute gibberish through the mic. And it was kind of funny.
A lot of times, because like that's kind of what happened. Like when they did the Grammys and his mic wasn't working.
Right.
Apparently it was coming through his in-ears, but not the house and not broadcast. And so maybe it was something similar like that. You know what it probably was? It was probably 'cause you're standing on the cable ramp.
Yeah. It was probably my fault.
You were standing on his mic cable.
Yeah, no, it was funny. Cause like, yeah, I was listening to it back, you know, a couple of weeks after, and then it was, cause I was excited for, you know, cause we'll never stop. We'll never quit. Cause we're Metallica. And then like, that's not at all what he said. Not that anyone could hear it live anyway, right, but yeah. He was just saying some funny stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
That's cool. Well, we're already, you know, getting into the set list here. Kind of walk us through, you know, some highlights for you.
Yeah, totally. So like that was certainly an interesting thing. And then, you know, pretty happy that they played Creeping Death right after, because I got Creeping Death in Boston like pretty late in the set.
Yeah.
So it was pretty excited, because I think like back in the 90s, you know, Creeping Death, that was always like, you know, one, two or three, like always right up front.
Right,
so pretty excited that they're kind of bringing that back to, you know, the second slot.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I don't know if it's, you know, like the new Metallica fans like fault, but like, do folks not know anymore? Like you have to chant die during Creeping Death.
And you have
it's like,
to, yeah.
Yeah, you have to. And like, I don't know, people, it was kind of quiet, a little lacking during that part. So I was, you know,
that's
trying
weird
to get that
yeah.
going, but yeah, I don't know.
I can't imagine not yelling that at the show. Like,
right.
I'm pretty reserved at shows. Like I don't get in the pit. I don't go crazy. Cause I really just want to pay attention, you know, and that's just the music nerd and musician in me. But that's like one of the main parts that like, I will put my fist in the air and start chanting die.
That's what I'm saying. Like that's the one part that like, you have to. And so I don't know if it was, you know, a lot of people's first time there or whatever, but like, that's the part you got to sing.
Yeah, absolutely, man. 100%, dude. 100%.
Yeah. So Creeping Death, that was super fun. You know, like that's obviously, like I said, super fun to have that in the front of the set list. And then, so during Sandman, it was pretty funny. So like to my right, so like stage left, like front of the Snake Pit, some folks, like right when Sandman started, some folks had picked this guy up in a wheelchair.
Whoa.
And like had him like up in the wheelchair for like the entire song. And like, that was amazing. And they kind of like brought him like all the way to the front. And then like security was like, you have to like, you know, put him down like right in front of right in front of the rail. And like, I was listening, actually they posted, cause you know, they usually post like on YouTube, like two songs from every show,
right,
or whatever. And so you can see this guy like being crowd surfed in the wheelchair in the video. And like during, I think it was maybe the first or second chorus, you can hear him like kind of laugh a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, cause he was like, look, cause obviously like it was super close to him. Like you could hear him like kind of just like break character a little bit, if you will, during the chorus. And so like, it was funny. It's like, yeah, that's definitely what he was looking at. He was laughing at that. So that was a pretty cool thing to see during Sandman.
I can tell you this, man, if I'm ever in a wheelchair, float me around the crowd, man. No problem.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, cause for however long that happened, let's say the whole song, I mean, that dude got like one of the coolest views in the whole stadium.
I know. Absolute ride of his life, man.
Yeah, for sure. Do you know where he ended up when they brought him back down?
Yeah. They like, I'm sure, like, yeah, because like security was like, you gotta like bring this guy down. So I think they dropped him like right in front of the rail, and so I'm assuming he like ended up like
they just stayed there,
right there. Yeah, yeah, I'm assuming.
Let the guy in the wheelchair stay there.
Yeah, you know? Right. Yeah, and then so yeah, after Sandman, so third song, and that's when they, you know, they went back up to like the main part of the stage.
Right.
Yeah, and then James goes, "This is from our second album," and then you know they went right into Ride the Lightning, which is always a favorite. Gotta have it.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's such a powerful song, man, especially live. I have to go back and look at the set list of all the shows I went to. I don't know if I've ever seen that one live, actually.
Oh, you haven't?
I don't think so. I have to double check, but...
Wow, that's crazy, because I think I've gotten Ride the Lightning every time.
Well, so when I saw him on, I mean, four of the five times I've seen him was on the World Wired tour.
Yeah.
And they were, it was a stadium tour for other than two of the shows I saw. And so at least on the stadium shows, we've talked about in the past where they kind of kept it a bit safe. There wasn't anything like a dirty window in there, you know? And so usually what we were getting off of Lightning was, you know, Fade to Black, Creeping Death, Through the Bell Tolls, you know, but yeah, I have to double check the, all the set lists that I've gone to.
Yeah. Cause again, I've gotten, I think at each of the three shows that I've been to, I think also in the four slot at every show. But yeah, always love that. And then that went into like right into Memory Remains, which again, I'm not the biggest Reload guy. Got to get back in there. But I mean, that song live, I certainly enjoy a lot.
Oh, there's dude, live. That's kind of another one, kind of like the Die Chant. Like at the end of Memory Remains, the Marian Faithful part, you have to sing along to that.
Yep. Yeah, you got to sing along because, yeah, Lars kind of like, he kind of stands up. You know, he loves to like, you know, get people going.
Right.
And then, you know, James gets the singing going. And so, yeah, that goes on for like almost 2 minutes. Like that's really fun.
Oh, yeah. And the crowd usually will keep singing after they're done, too.
Right.
Like at S&M 2, he's like, we got to stop.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And then after that, yeah, it went into, it says Before Nothing Else Matters, Kirk Doodle. I don't know what specific song he was playing on the guitar, because in Boston, before he played Nothing Else Matters, I can't believe I'm forgetting, because he was playing like a Boston area song. I can't remember what it was. I don't know if he did the same thing.
Aerosmith.
And was it?
I don't know. I'm just guessing. Dropkick Murphys.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm not sure. But I mean, yeah, he didn't mess up the intro to Nothing Else Matters
here in
Pittsburgh like he did in Boston. That was certainly a funny little situation to see in person.
For sure. I'll bet.
No, he's definitely back on track. I think Clint's calling it the Kirk Fuffle, right? That's what it is.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think, you know, that you, a lot of, you know, kind of little, not, I don't want to say downtime in the set, but, you know, just, I think having that in the sixth song is a good place to put it.
Yeah, for sure, man. Yeah. And these set lists that they've been doing this year, where all of a sudden Sandman is third and Nothing Else Matters is six. It's like, man, two of your biggest songs you get over with pretty quick.
Yeah, I like it a lot just because, like, there's a little bit more of, like, an element of surprise going on.
Right.
Just because what they've been doing for so long is, you know, they'll end the show with Nothing and then Sandman. And so when Sandman plays, you kind of know, like,
yeah, this
the
is
show
it.
Is over. Yeah, right. Like, this is it. But, you know, the case here is a little bit different where those are so upfront in the set list. And from then on, it's kind of like, it's game on now. Like, anything can happen.
For sure.
So definitely a little bit more exciting.
Yeah, man. So Dirty Windows next. So you said that they played that at the Buffalo show. I think you were looking at the set list.
I think I saw Dirty Window on the set list in Buffalo as well. Honestly, I'm pretty happy they played it. I mean, that's my first song live off of St. Anger.
Yeah.
And, you know, James did the thing, you know, before the song. He was kind of getting the crowd going. He was like, what do you think? St. Anger, you know, and everyone's like, yeah. So I'm happy they played it. Man, live, dude, it sounded great. I'm not going to lie.
Dude, for the first live version I saw as it was happening via live stream was the 40th anniversary shows. And I remember, I mean, anyone can go back and listen to those episodes where me and Clinton Paul were watching him and doing live commentary. I remember thinking, like, gosh, this song is heavy as hell, man. Like,
oh my God.
It doesn't come across that way on the record. But then live, it was just like, geez.
Yeah, no, exactly. So Rob kind of like halfway through the song, Rob kind of like came out to the end of the snake pit and was jamming out there. And then when it's like Protector and like the lights were like flashing and like Rob was like right in front, like that was a really cool visual. I mean,
yeah,
they were really jamming to that song. That was pretty cool.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. And then Sad But True, I think James, Kirk and Rob all kind of came to the front of the snake pit for Sad But True. And the visuals from Sad But True are also super fun, you know, with like the red and blue lights kind of just like flashing, like the hammer going on the screen.
For sure. Yeah, you can't really go wrong with that one. I mean, live, that song is so good. I mean, just Black Album. So it's like, you know, what, one of six singles that are on that record or something.
Yeah. And then, after Sad But True. So Whiskey in the Jar, I don't know. Tell me how you feel. I don't know if I'm the biggest Whiskey guy. Just because, like, I don't know. Again, I'm so new to the band, and like I would rather see a Metallica song there. Sure. I don't know. I'd rather have like Sanitarium or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I.
Yeah, I mean, I dig the song. I mean, you know, it's like an old Irish, you know, traditional folk song or whatever. And, you know, and they're kind of doing Thin Lizzy's version of it. I dig the song. You know, I think I'm pretty much cool with it being in a set. I think because when that song came out, they put it out as a single. You know, there's a video for it and everything. So, and you know, like every once in a while throwing in a cover song is cool. You know, like they, you know, they haven't done Misfits stuff in a long time or whatever, or
yeah,
So What or whatever. And maybe just they're getting older and they're like, eh, those lyrics, maybe we shouldn't be singing about that.
right. Yeah.
So maybe that's a little more of a safe one, you know? That's, I don't know. That's kind of my thought on that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I certainly, you know, don't hate it or whatever. But again, I think, I'd rather have like a Sanitarium or something there, you know.
I think if they're going to put a cover on the set, if I got to pick it, I would rather them do Turn the Page.
Who, remind me, who's...
That's a Bob Seger cover. It's on Garage Inc. Okay. You probably recognize it, but they do a great version of it.
Okay, cool.
The original one has saxophone.
Okay.
But Kirk plays like the sax line on guitar instead, but yeah, they do a great version of it. Dip into the Garage Inc. Record, and that one's on there. Both Whiskey in the Jars as well.
Okay, cool. That's long. They did like 20 songs, right? It's pretty extensive.
Yeah, well, it's basically like the first disc, if you're going by CD standards, the first disc is all, at the time, was all new covers they recorded with Bob Rock.
Okay.
And then the other disc is all stuff they've been previously released. So you have like the original Garage Days that we revisited with like the Small Hours and the Wait and stuff like that. And then other stuff on there that they've just kind of put out as B-sides, the Prince, Bread Fan, stuff like that.
Nice.
It's a great collection.
Yeah. I got to get into it. Cause yeah, I've listened to that version of Whiskey in the Jar that they did on there just on Apple Music, but I haven't gotten into the rest of the stuff on there.
Yeah. It's fun. There's a lot of great covers on there. There's one called Astronomy by Blue Oyster Cult. That's great. There's, actually, no, it's not on Garage Inc, but there's a great, it was a tribute album to Ronnie James Dio called Ronnie Rising. And Metallica did like a medley of three different Dio songs, which is really good.
Right on.
But yeah, check it all out, man.
I certainly will. Yeah. Then after Whiskey, they went into Bells. And they, I don't know when they started, you know, having this video, but there's like a, you know, 2-minute video before Bells, you know, it's like the Raven on there.
Yeah.
And then it kind of, you know, cuts and then it gets going. But I was watching like a couple of weeks ago, their Woodstock 99, it was 99 or 94. I'm not sure which one it was, but I really liked what they did back then where Lars like gets on the kick drum and then Jason got the bass line going. And I'm kind of like, oh man, I kind of wish they did something similar to that now instead of just going like right into it.
For sure. Yeah, they kind of built it up back in the 90s. You know, Jason almost, it was almost kind of like his bass solo.
Yeah.
And then that would morph into, you know, the song.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool if they did something like that now. And I mean, Rob absolutely killed it, of course. I mean, this is, again, you got to have it in the set. But
oh, yeah, he's such a good bass player too. So he, no joke.
Yeah, totally. And I don't think anything particularly stuck out here. I mean him and Kirk definitely, of course, because like this is kind of they always mess around,
right?
Kind of during the beginning of Bells, I think they came out, you know, to the front of the snake pit and were, you know, messing around.
Mm-hmm, totally.
Out there. And so, and then yeah, I think, you know, James goes back up to like Lars's kit and kind of just hitting on a cymbal, you know, with his hand, which is
totally
always those like little things that you kind of don't notice unless you're there.
Mm-hmm.
Are always really funny to see.
Yeah, for sure, man. And those are little fun things you do as you tour a long time, you kind of just find these moments to kind of like just not be so serious and stuff like that, you know, maybe try to make each other laugh or whatever, you know, just a little reminder that like, hey, we're doing this. We're still having a good time doing this, you know?
Yeah, totally. And I'm kind of curious how like things like that come into place, you know, with like Rob coming into the band in 2003, And then it's like, I'm sure him and Kirk didn't have a conversation like, hey man, like during Bells, we're going to like run right at each other during the riff.
Right. It probably just kind of happened naturally. You right. know, like at a certain yeah. point, like they were trying to mess with each other. And because Bells right. is like, maybe with the exception of like, you know, Kirk's the kind of intro. Other than that, and that's not really that hard to play, like that, it's a rhythmically, it's a pretty easy song. So that one, I think they can let loose. You know, you're not going to see them chasing each other around on Blackened or something, you know?
Yeah.
yeah. You gotta stand still and watch your hands and be like, don't mess up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, Bells was great. And then Into Moth, Into Flame. Happy they played a Hardwired song at this set, because we didn't get any Hardwired songs in Boston, yeah. I believe. So was super happy to see Moth. I mean, I love that song a lot. I was kind of, again, I was anticipating that they were going to open the show with Whiplash. I really was hoping that they would open it with Hardwired, just because, like,
yeah.
I love that song so much. But so, yeah, but definitely if they're going to play a song off Hardwired, I think, you know, as you guys said, I think Moth is kind of going to be the one going forward.
Yeah, it's probably the one. I mean, I could see them maybe. I mean, every once in a while they'll throw in Spit Out the Bone.
Yeah.
The only other one I wish they would maybe rotate, if they're only going to choose one or two from that record, is Halo on Fire. That's one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, yeah, to me, it's kind of like the modern day Fade to Black or something.
Yeah. And I think, as everyone else has also said, like during Moth, like I think this was one, it might have been the first or maybe second time during the show that they had pyro. And like, again, I was, you know, 15 people back from the snake pit. And then right. like that's even further back from the main stage where like the flames are. And like, even back where I was, man, that was hot.
Oh yeah, it like, absolutely is, man. It's no joke. Insane. I mean, I've been what feels like 100 yards from the stage and you still feel that those flames, you know. I could yeah. feel it at the Slipknot show. I mean, they had stuff on stage. I mean, I wasn't like, ooh, that's hot. But you could definitely feel a bit of warmth coming from the stage whenever the fire would go off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, again, you know, for a Hardwired song, super happy to have Moth in there. Yeah, that was great. Yeah, and then into Fade to Black. I think on the episode on Monday, you had Brad on, right?
Yes.
He was talking about, and so he was at the show where James kicked over the...
He was, St. Louis, yeah.
yeah. Yeah, so as far as I could tell, I mean, it was in tune in Pittsburgh. James didn't yeah. get upset and did not kick it over.
I think that's only happened like maybe once or twice. I want to say it happened another time maybe in Denver or something like that. I can't remember off the top of my head. But yeah, I mean, if James is kicking over a guitar, then something's really wrong.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the song was, it was amazing as ever. And of course, you know, James gave his little, you know, speech that he always does, kind of, you know, towards the end there. And I thought it was nice, like each, because I've gotten Fade to Black at all the shows I've been to, his little speech that he does there, kind of, you know, about the song being about suicide and like talking to your friends, you know, getting help, whatever. It's been a little different at each show, which yeah. I thought is, I think that's really cool. He's kind of, you know, he's got something different to say every time. So
yeah,
I thought
awesome.
That was pretty nice.
Yeah, that's very cool.
And then, yeah, right into Seek. So like, yeah, end of the main set, Seek and Destroy. I think, I'm trying to remember. I don't think Lars's kit they had on the snake pit for Seek. They might have. I'm not sure. But James was definitely, James and Kirk and Rob were definitely right up front on the snake pit for
right.
Seek and Destroy. Just because it's such an interactive song. You know, they want to be super close.
Yeah, for sure.
To man. The audience.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, you know, that's arguably one of the most sing-along songs they have, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously you have the Die thing. You have the End of Memory Remains. But
yeah.
I mean, Seek, it's like every chorus you're singing along. And then at the very end, they have everyone sing the da 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 da.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I loved having that like right at the end of the main set here. Because I don't know, you know, how many people around me, it was their first show or whatever. Like they might think like, oh, this really is the end of the set. Because like obviously, you know, I know, oh, they're gonna end it here, and then they're gonna come back out
right.
for three more.
They've already
and
played
so,
Sandman.
Like, you know, yeah, like they play it off as, you know, oh, this is the last set or last song, you know, and like James takes his guitar off, and, you know, the fireworks go off, you know, thank you, have a good night. And like, you know, they kind of, you know, go off stage for a few minutes. And then, because again, I'm so deep into it, you know, I know that, you know, when they come back out, they're going to play like, you know, a pretty thrashy song.
Right.
And, you know, I was really hoping for Blackened. Just because,
yeah.
again, you know, I love Justice so much, but I mean, I'm Battery, of course, you know, when that starts. So I'm, you know, just as hyped, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
right when that starts.
And that song is, I mean, it's like, it still blows me away that they'll pull that song out, because it's, that song rhythmically is no joke.
I know. I kind of don't, I can't even comprehend.
It's pretty wild. So, I mean, like, I've kind of been here and there, like at night, if I'm just wanting to play guitar, I've been starting to kind of relearning certain Metallica riffs or whatever, just to see if I can either remember them off the top of my head or to see if, you know, maybe it's a riff I've never learned growing up. And then it's like, I wonder if I could play that, you know, but battery's tough, man. That's a wrist burner, as I call it.
Oh yeah, totally. And one thing I wanted to mention was, because I was listening to the episode that you guys put out on Monday. I was listening to that today. I think you were saying you've got a pair of fitted earplugs.
Yes.
For shows, right? So they're not fitted. I go to a lot of shows. And so I've got just a regular pair, the high fidelity, it's minus, 10 decibels or whatever. So I was wearing those the whole show. And then I was they're coming out for the encore. I was like, I gotta take them out.
Yeah.
And so they come out, the intro tape to Battery, obviously it's just guitar. So it's not super loud, but then, once James's guitar gets going in and then the drums come in, I've got to take them out.
Yeah.
I could not get over how loud it was. It was
pretty
insane.
Yeah.
For three songs, I was like, I gotta take them out. I gotta experience this.
Yeah. It's such a tough battle because it's I'm almost 44 years old, and so I'm like, okay, I've been doing the music thing for so long. I've been on the road since I was 19. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first probably 10 years I toured, I didn't wear earplugs, I didn't have inner monitors, it was just a loud monitor in my face, and going to shows, even playing at home sometimes, turn the amp up a little too loud, but it wasn't even that long ago. It was almost a year ago. I finally just went to a friend of mine works for the company Ultimate Ears, and I was able to go get my ears scanned again, like you would for an inner monitor, to get fitted earplugs that are, I think it's minus 15 dB, which I think is a little too much. I need to get some new filters for it. I think 10 is probably the sweet spot, but it is nice. I mean, it's like I said, it's a double-edged sword. During the show, I'm like, I don't care, it sounds awesome.
Exactly.
Then when I get home and I put my head on my pillow and all I hear is beep. And I'm well, shit.
Yeah, I totally hear you there.
Yeah, for sure, man. But I mean, dude, this encore, this 1-2-3 punch they've been doing of Battery One into Puppets is pretty gnarly.
Yeah, it is. And again, I'm not a drummer, so in my opinion, I think Lars nailed the double bass during one. Cool. I know you're a little bit more critical of it. Sometimes, I think you described it as the tennis balls in the laundry or whatever.
I think it was tennis shoes.
Yeah.
Right. I was just being a jerk. That was year one, I think I said that. I don't know.
Oh, man. Yeah. But I mean, again, I like that when that part of the song comes in, it's just yeah.
Oh, you can't. I mean, there's nothing like that. I remember first hearing that. I'm just like, oh, my God, what is this machine gun part?
Yeah. You kind of everyone's jaw is just kind of open. It's like, I don't even know what to do. It's like,
right.
Darkness.
Or just whenever they're playing that song, every time I've seen it, I just keep thinking to myself, man, this was the first song I ever heard by this band. And I'm like, now I'm watching it live. This is so cool.
Yeah. I certainly hope that, every time I see them from now on, one stays in there.
Yeah. For
and
sure.
Then for Master, they're still playing the Stranger Things intro.
Were. Okay.
They did have, I think the characters, I haven't watched Stranger Things, but I think the character's name is Eddie.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had him. Yeah. They had that on this. It's only 20 seconds, but just for the intro. I don't know. I think it's pretty cool for them to kind of lean into that whole thing. I think that's pretty awesome.
I mean, it's not like they're trying to gain new fans necessarily. I mean, they're one of the biggest bands ever. It's not like they're sitting there going wow, ticket sales are really slumping, we better up it a little bit. I think they're just,
for sure.
I think they're just embracing it. I think they're embracing the fact that, you have bands like Metallica and Kate Bush who all of a sudden, other new generations are discovering their music through this TV show. And I think that's rad. It's like, I mean, there might be people out there, old school, the trues that are like, oh, I won't watch anything Metallica doing MTV. Well, it's like, well, that's how I discovered Metallica, was watching Headbangers Ball at 1 o'clock in the morning when I was in whatever grade and seeing the one video, So everyone has their way of getting into whatever band they're into. And if that's because of a TV show, great,
Exactly. Yeah. And, like I said, I'm only, 2 years into this through a different TV show, Billions, where it's like, the band themselves were on the show. It's a little bit different,
right?
But still, I mean, that's kind of how I was like, oh, these guys seem pretty cool.
Yeah, man. That's awesome. Hell yeah.
Yeah. And then, so after Master, Fireworks galore. And so after the show, you know, it seems like some people will want to, you know, stick around. Like people like me will want to stick around because they, you know, they come out to the front of the snake pit and kind of, you know, give right. their goodbyes. And so, you know, just one specific little thing, I will never forgive myself for this. So I kind of like snuck my way in kind of as far as I could, you know, they're kind of, you know, throwing picks out or whatever. And so, you know, James was done throwing his picks. Rob was done throwing the picks. And, you know, Kirk had a few left and he kind of came to the front and he threw a pick and it like was, I saw it flying. I have this on video. I was like, just like holding my phone yeah. up, you know, and the pick, like it hit my palm and then like bounced down. And then there was kind of a scramble for it in front of me and I didn't get it. And I'm like,
yeah.
I will never get that close again to getting a pick from Kirk.
And so no picks.
No picks. Didn't get any picks, but like, I don't know. It was still like a very cool moment to have on video, but I'm still just like, oh, man, like I really wish I would have had some better coordination in that moment.
The one that got away.
Exactly. The one that got away. Yeah, man. And that was the show. Like, you know, third time in the last year was super amazing. Rode an electric scooter back to the Airbnb.
Yeah, you did.
Ethan, I'm not joking. I could hardly walk, like, because I had been standing in that spot since like 4:30.
Oh, I'll
and like
bet.
they didn't go until 9.
So yeah.
I could hardly walk out of there. I was like, I need to ride a scooter back.
And yeah, so,
yeah, flew back. Yeah,
that's kind of the other thing as far as like getting in there early, getting a good spot, sitting through the opening bands. It's like when it's all said and done, man. If you get in there, let's say doors at 4:30. Let's say your worst case, you're in there by 6. You still have 5 hours till Metallica's done.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? No, I could. My knees were. It was more so my knees than my feet because I was like, I like the Adidas Ultra Boosts, like they're pretty cushy. And so my feet were fine, but it was my knees. I was walking out of there. I was like, man, I really got to find a scooter. And so luckily, I don't know how, luckily I found one because it was obviously a mob scene outside.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we'll see. I mean, again, you know, next couple of years, whenever they're around, certainly going, got to go. Got to bring CJ, got to bring everyone around.
Got to go, man. So. Well, I don't know. I have a feeling they're not, like I said earlier, they're either going to announce the record this fall. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to wait as long in between to announce like another full tour.
Yeah.
I think normally a lot of bands will like, they'll do their full album cycle to maybe be kind of quiet for a year and then new album, all that stuff. But I mean, the actual album cycle for Hardwired has been done for a bit, you know, and then everything else has just been like, obviously makeup dates from the pandemic, festival dates, random one-offs. So this is we're kind of towards the tail end of that in between time of album cycles. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, certainly looking forward to seeing what happens. And then I just had one other small anecdote from the show that I just want to mention before we go. So Pittsburgh, that was the only time I've ever been there. But small anecdote for all the folks out there. So Pittsburgh is the only city which all the sports teams have the same colors, black and yellow.
So
it's the only city that has that. And so, you know, Rob, he's like he's this big skateboarding guy. So he usually, you know, he has the Vans with like the white stripe on it. But for this show, I noticed because I was like looking through photos that they posted after the next day. And for this show, he had, you know, it was the black Vans, but the stripe was yellow.
Oh, a little nod to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I was like, that's a nice little nod. I don't know if that was like something that he thought about or something, or someone else was like, hey, man,
right.
Like, that'd be cool.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That's awesome. I'm going to have to make some Dodgers ones.
Yeah.
Although I don't know if I wear blue shoes.
Yeah. Right. I usually wear, you know, black or white shoes. One last very small thing.
Yeah.
So I flew out the next day, and I'm not joking. Like probably like one out of every 10 people in the airport had, you know, Metallica gear on Pittsburgh, not a huge city. Like everyone flying out the next day. I was in line at Chick-fil-A and I saw Chad was also in the line.
Oh, nice.
And I was too shy to say anything to him just cause like, I don't know. I feel like, you know, he's in there and it's like everyone around him is wearing Metallica stuff. It's, you know, might be his like worst nightmare. Like all those people are. You know, so like it was nice to like be like, oh wow, you know, like that's pretty cool to see. But I didn't say anything to him. But yeah. So I think, you know, that was the end of my journey for Pittsburgh. But that was pretty cool to see Chad there. So.
Well, that's cool, man. I mean, that's a cool way to end it for sure.
Yeah,
I wish you could have talked to Chad. Chad's a very nice dude.
I'm sure he is. I just didn't want it. You know.
Yeah, I'm sure. You know, I mean, even if he's kind of like, oh man, a lot of Metallica fans here. I'm sure he's gotten used to it. They're one of those bands where like. Hardcore fans know who the crew is and all that stuff, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I've been in those situations as a crew guy myself where sometimes they couldn't care less who you are. Other times they just know, like, oh, you work for this band, you know. They just know because you're, you know, you're 1 degree away from my hero or whatever.
Mm-hmm,
but
right.
That's cool, man. Well, I'm glad you had a great experience. It's your first time, you know, in Pittsburgh, you know, seeing the band at PNC Park, which is a great park, by the way. I've seen a Pirates game there before.
Yeah, it's beautiful, really beautiful.
It's awesome. It's not a huge stadium either. It's like not a third tier where a lot of stadiums have that.
Yeah, it's just kind of like the two main,
yeah,
like the bottom, and yeah.
Yeah, it's a really cool place to see a show. That's awesome, man. Well, dude, Ryan, thank you so much for taking the time to do Metal Tales with me, man.
Dude, thank you so much for having me. Seriously. And yeah, hopefully maybe see you guys when you're here in March with Morgan.
We'll definitely have to have a makeup hangout.
Yeah, definitely.
Or a makeout hangup. yeah, man, we'll definitely we'll hang in Boston next time we're there, man. We're looking forward to it, and it's going to be a good time on that headlining tour next spring. It's a big difference from what we've done the last year. So yeah, anyone listening, obviously we can do our best to get you into a show, but we just don't know until it gets closer. So if you want to grab tickets, I think they go on sale as of this episode airing, they will have gone on sale last Friday. But yeah, grab some tickets, come out to Morgan Wade Show, come say hey to me and Clint, and hopefully we'll be able to hang in Boston, man.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Hey everyone, Clint and Ethan here, and we want to tell you about a little thing called Patreon. Patreon is an easy and interactive way to support the people who make the things that you love.
For as little as $5 a month, you can ensure that Metal Up Your Podcast can continue to grow in quality and content. That's equivalent to a cup of coffee or a beer once a month.
Not only is it easy and affordable, but we've made it a priority since day one to give back to our Patreon community. We've given away deluxe box sets, rare vinyl, Black and Whiskey,
concert tickets to SNM2 and Slane Castle,
all four of our Cover Our World Black and EPs, 26 quarantine covers, and Lunar Satan demos,
invitations to exclusive Zoom happy hours, the ability to ask our guests like Jay Weinberg of Slipknot, Lizzie Hale, and members of the Metallica crew your very own questions,
and eligibility for our Metal Tales series, where you can be a guest on Metal Up Your Podcast and tell us all about a notable Metallica show you've been to.
Subscribe to Patreon today and immediately get access to years worth of bonus content.
Thank you for supporting the people who make the things that you love. Peace.
Adios.
I can't talk about it anymore. It's giving me a headache.
Here, take two of these.
Ah, Nuprin. Little. Yellow. Different.
Hi, I'm Clint Wells, and I'm a musician in Nashville, Tennessee.
And I'm Katie Featherston, an actress in Los Angeles.
And we've got a new podcast called A to Z with Clint and Katie.
That's right. Every other week, we go through the alphabet, highlighting the films, music, culture, and experiences that have shaped us.
Plus, our happy hour hangouts where we shoot the shit, read listener emails,
and drink wine out of coffee mugs at 8 in the morning.
You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts, so come hang with us every other Tuesday.
And don't forget your wine mug.